Hello, and welcome to Say Yes to NMES. I'm your host, Craig Mateer.
She spoke beautifully. Like, she was completely normal speech, but when she went to eat, it was a complete disaster.
Hello. Today I'm joined by Nikki Howe. She talks about several of her patients where VitalStim provides that extra buy-in so necessary to have success with your patients. Enjoy. Why don't we start by introducing yourself and let us know a little bit about you.
Sure. Thank you for having me. So my name is Nikki Howell. I have been a speech therapist for, my goodness, almost 14 years now, which is a little crazy. I started off thinking that I wanted to treat children, and my resume was just rocking for the pediatric world. And then I had a supervisor in grad school tell me, laugh at me actually, when I told her that I didn't want to treat adults because I thought dysphagia was gross and puree food was nasty and why would I want to do that? She laughed at me, and she was right, because my first job was actually on a brain injury unit down in New Orleans, and it was fantastic. So that's kind of where I started on brain injury. I got a little burned out, learned a lot of lessons, and ended up trying to start my own private practice. Didn't go super well. I'm not great at taking money from people, which you kind of need to do when you own a business. So that didn't last too long, and I ran back to the adult world very quickly. And since then, I've been in inpatient rehab, long-term care settings, TBI units, stroke units, LTACs, pretty much everything in the adult world except for home health. So now I am in a very small rural hospital, arguably possibly the smallest hospital on the planet, like really, really small. And the majority of my population now is geriatric patients in this very small town. So it's kind of like, I call it a glorified nursing home. So very different from what I have been used to, because the majority of my career has been in inpatient rehabs, primarily with TBI patients. And that's really where my like true passion is. But we moved, and that's what made me end up in this very small rural hospital, which has been interesting and learned a lot of lessons here too. So I have two kids. I've got a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old. I've got a husband, a dog, some chickens, and I'm kind of just a nerd, kind of just a speech therapy nerd that really likes my job. So here I am on that. Another podcast. Yeah.
I love that. And where did you get your degree from, and how long have you been in SLP?
Oh, I'm sorry. I got my degree from NYU in New York City, and that was in 2009. I actually did go back to school for a quick second. I thought I wanted my PhD. Went back to school for about a year and a half, did great, but ultimately I need to fix people. And so I realized that having a PhD wasn't going to give me any more money, unfortunately. So I left the program with a lot of knowledge that kind of led me to where I am now with cognition and falls and all the things that I've been working with Chow for. So yeah, that's it.
Perfect. Perfect. And don't let me forget, I want to ask you about that when we finish this stuff. I want to ask you about the fall and the Chow stuff.
Yeah.
So how long have you been exposed to NMES? How did you first hear about VitalStim or NMES? How did you first start getting involved with that?
So I think I was first exposed to it straight out of grad school at Toro on my first brain injury unit. I believe it was a while ago. I believe that we did. Some people used it then, but it wasn't used a whole lot in the facility where I was. Or no. I think it was more of a funding thing. They would like only pay for like the two older therapists to be certified. That's what it was. And so they were the ones that went all over the hospital and they got to use it. And then when I transferred, when my husband and I had to move, I went to Methodist Rehab. I convinced them to do a lot of things, one of which was VitalStim Plus. So that's when I really, 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 really learned about VitalStim and the new unit, and really kind of started using it to its full potential. Like I think I might have been certified at some point prior to that, but it was really at the turning point in my career, in my thoughts about dysphagia, all of these things, where I really started to use the device to its fullest potential, I guess is the best way that I could say that.
That's great.
And that was, yeah. So that, and that was in, that was probably, oh my gosh, math. Probably 8 years ago. So for the last 8 years, I've been using it more religiously when I have it available to me. Right. So, yeah.
So I think we may talk about a bunch, but I know we're going to talk at least about a couple patients, one more of a traditional vital stim use and one maybe a little more atypical. So let's start with the, I guess, what would be a more traditional patient. What can you tell me about them?
So he was an older guy. He was not older, like 90s, you know, where I am right now, old is like 102. So he was probably in his like 70, upper 70s, very motivated, cognitively intact, and just really enjoyed eating, and his stroke just wiped out his swallow system, and he was very upset about it. So, and he had a really amazing family unit, so I integrated them into every single one of our sessions. So we did vital stim, but then they also went back to the room and did exercises on their own for like homework and things like that. We use the biofeedback on him too. And I remember his biggest thing was that he wanted to be able to eat gumbo, right? So I'm from the South, and I think he maybe was from South Louisiana too, but at the time we were both in Mississippi. And so he wanted to be able to eat gumbo and etouffees and like all the things that we consider a mixed consistency. And that was his like major goal. And he talked about it a lot, you know. I eventually he was like, I'll even settle for some Campbell's soup, you know. he was very cute about it. But we just progressed through harder consistencies. He started off on, I don't remember if I had him on thickened liquids or not, but I know that he was on puree, and it was a really big challenge because he did not like it at all. So we had a lot of discussions about temporary PEG tubes and if that was going to be needed. And that's really what motivated him to keep going and eating the puree and participating in therapy and doing all of those, you know, awesome things that are hard for patients, right? So, and I think he really liked the vital stim because I feel like a lot of times with these older patients, they need something more concrete, right? So even if it's not the unit with the biofeedback where they can like see their swallow and stuff, even if there's just some stimulation happening, I feel like we get a little bit more buy-in, and there's, you know, more structure and explaining to them the like, you know, quantitative data and like where they are and what our goal is. I feel like with a lot of these older patients, that sort of like concreteness and plan for those more cognitively intact really, really, really helps. So he liked the vital stim unit because I kind of feel like he felt like he was doing something rather than me just being like, you know, do this exercise that seems so abstract and so vague because it's inside your throat. So he liked it. His family liked it. And we did exercises on their own with the unit, but then we also did mealtime sometimes with the unit on, again, because he just didn't like the puree at all. And it kind of like gave him a purpose to eat the puree, right? Like, all right, I'll eat this only because it's therapy and because you're going to zap me at the same time. And so I'm going to get this food down. And there's more of a point to it than just me eating baby food, because he definitely kept calling it baby food.
And I'm not a therapist, but, and I say that all the time on these podcasts, but it seems to me that vital stim, it's almost like a personal trainer in my mind. As you were talking, I was thinking, well, it'd be nice to to feel like, oh, at least I got something coming in from the outside that's helping me, right? I can do sit-ups on my own, but boy, if there's someone screaming at me and making me, and I feel like they're pushing me or whatever, and VitalStim seems to be that personal trainer. Is that fair?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, there's just something about that external feedback, whether it's through something that we look at or through something that we feel. But it's, you know, more than just us being the personal trainer. Right. Cause you know, I feel like they just, I'm with you.
And you said, so he never ended up on a peg tube, but that was always on the horizon as a possibility if he wasn't going to be able to progress through, correct?
That was our, you know, I hate to say a threat, but that was like kind of what his family used. As a threat, like, okay, you don't have to eat this, but you're going to have to get a peg tube. Cause he really just did not. And you know, the speech therapists know this, like some patients will take the puree down and they're happy to have it and they say, thanks. And other patients, they just can't even look at it. Right. And he was one of those that just did not want to look at it. And we actually scheduled his sessions when we did eat. So Methodist Rehab has a dining room. And so sometimes we would do therapy and there with some patients, but he would just get really upset when everybody else was eating, like, you know, red beans and rice or some like actual food. And he had to eat the puree. So we ended up scheduling his sessions in the dining room just to get him out of his room, but not during lunchtime. So we either pushed lunchtime forward or back so that we had the whole dining room to ourselves, but he was still getting that full meal where we did our exercises and therapy with the entire meal. But Methodist is great like that because they have these like big, huge dining rooms with like full of windows. And when you're in the hospital, I feel like just tweaking small things like that about your therapy can really just help boost a patient's motivation. You know, I'm going to come zap you. That's what he said to him. I'm going to come zap you, but we're going to do it in the sunshine.
Like, it reminds me of some other therapists I've talked to, the isolation that dysphagia causes people because they can't eat. They don't want to be around people that can eat because it reminds them that they can't eat.
Right.
And so they withdraw. Go ahead.
And if you're from the South, and lots of other places too, but you know, I've lived lots of places and the South really, like, eating is our culture, right? I mean, and we do it well, right? We cook and we eat really well.
We're very good at it.
Yes, we're very good at that. So I feel like even more so because it's so ingrained in our culture. And on top of that, in the hospital, you're not looking forward to anything, right? You're like, if you're cognitively intact, a lot of times you're bored. You're waiting on therapy. You're waiting on the next meal, right? Like those are the things that you're looking forward to. So to take those away or to have those filled with, you know, what he called baby food is really, really hard. And as everybody knows, motivation is a huge factor in therapy. So anything that we can do to keep them motivated, you know, can make or break really the whole clinical experience.
And what, how long was it? Post, you said stroke, right? How long post stroke?
Oh, pretty immediate. I don't remember the details, but he was inpatient rehab. So he most likely came like from the main hospital a couple weeks post stroke straight to us. Yeah, if I had to guess.
And how long, what was the rough treatment time frame?
We had to keep him a little bit longer. He had great insurance. So I remember him being with us for like 6 weeks. Which is not always the case. A lot of times, especially with patients who are more like mobile, my fund dysphagia patients got kicked out, right? Because the insurance company speech doesn't matter. It's all about if they can walk, you know, says the disgruntled speech therapist. But Understood. So he was with us probably 6 to 8 weeks. So we had a lot of time. And there was also a time in there when my caseload was low. So I was able to pick him up extra, and that was really fun. I always like when productivity is not an issue. And so for these dysphagia patients that are super motivated, you can, you know, hit them up multiple times a day. And it's awesome.
Obviously, you were successful. Tell us about the end result and how that made him feel, and also how it made his family feel.
Well, it made me feel great too. I mean, I'm smiling huge. You can't see me, but just thinking about it, he did fantastic. He left on an altered diet, but not like a crazy altered diet. It was like now what we would call, you know, like a soft and chopped diet. And with thin liquids, for sure, because I'm pretty sure, I can't remember, like I was saying earlier, if he was on thick. But he left with a modified, but like super close to being normal diet. He was very happy. He was eating in the dining room again. Months after he left, he sent me a card, like a mailed card, with a picture of him eating some soup, because he was really excited to finally get his gumbo. And so that just, you know, made my decade to get that in the mail. So even after he left, he continued. Methodist has a fantastic outpatient program. So he was able to do outpatient, continue with the same therapy that we had been doing for so long. He was able to still do that, you know, 2 to 3 times per week as a outpatient, and he finally got to that regular diet.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And you bring up a good point. Obviously, as a therapist, you get in this field to help people. Being able to provide that kind of success and notable success to someone has to make you feel really good.
Yeah. I mean, that's why we do this, right? I mean, that's
right.
It's surely not for the pay. but yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about. And that's also when I kind of start to get down, because I think that all therapists go through, and probably every profession, maybe, you just kind of go through slumps where you know, you have a rough patch of patients, and, or you're just, you know, you find yourself doing the same things over and over again. And, you know, I've learned over the 14 years of doing this that you got to kind of step back and analyze, like, all right, why am I in a slump? What's going on? And like, find where to find that motivation again. And I just think that's really important, because you have to remember those stories, right? Because it's not always, especially in the hospital world with productivity and all the things, it can get hard. So you got to remember those guys and keep trucking.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's why I'm glad to be able to tell these stories too, so that people can hear them and know that that is not only family members, those success stories can happen, but also as therapists, if you're thinking about, you know, trying Vital Stim,
absolutely,
you can have your own success stories.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about what would be the maybe not traditional patient.
Yes. I can see her so clearly. Yeah, she was super unique. I think she had a fall. I can't, again, like I said, these two were fairly long ago, but they cases that just really stood out in my mind. And I think she had a fall, and she had oral apraxia only, which obviously led to dysphagia, or oral dysphagia. And you know, and I've had grad students tell me in the past that, like, you can't only have oral apraxia. I don't know who started that rumor, but I heard that from multiple people. And I have this one particular patient's like, oh, yes, you can, because she spoke beautifully. Like, she was completely normal speech, but when she went to eat, it was a complete disaster. Complete, you know, and usually that's not what happens, right? Usually somebody has oral apraxia, they have dysphagia, they have or dysarthria. And so they're speaking and their oral stage is a mess, but she was not like that. And it was really interesting. She was motivated as well. She was hilarious. She was one of those ladies. If anybody works in the hospital, they're going to totally get this, but anybody that wakes up and puts on makeup in the hospital, like, has a certain personality, right? And she showed up for breakfast every morning, like, dressed to the nines, like eyeliner, mascara, blush, hair done, all the things. So she was a trip. But when she ate, she looked like a 2-year-old or less. I mean, food just falling out of her mouth. It was it was really, really odd. So this is when I was like super geeking out with the biofeedback and like really just learning about Vital Stem Plus and all the amazing things that you can do with that unit. And so what we did with her, and she was the first person that I ever did this with. So this is not even like I had been practicing for years. I literally told her, like, I've never done this before. the machine and the teaching says that I can do this. So like, we're going to give it a try. And she was like, let's do it. Right. And so we used the biofeedback to get her timing right. Right. So to work on her moving her tongue, initiating her swallow at a certain time. And it was crazy interesting. I love the biofeedback so much. Again, for the same reason of just having that sort of like more concrete something for patients to look at, as opposed to, you know, do this swallowing exercise that just, it just seems so abstract because it's inside of our throat and it inside of our mouth, right? So we really got to put the biofeedback to use with her, because orally she was a mess and the timing of her swallow was a complete mess. It wasn't that her strength was impaired. It was really more timing. So that's why we did more of the biofeedback stuff. And I had very honest and open goals with her because, like I said, she was one of the first patients that I had ever done this with. And so I'm a skeptic at heart. So I told her, like, I don't know if this is going to work, but we have to try, right? We have this crazy cool technology, like, bear with me. And so she was like, let's do it. And obviously it did work. So we used the device to work on timing. We used a mirror for visual feedback on top of like what she could actually look at on the device also. And she progressed really, really well. So we combined that obviously with real food and progressing from purees to harder consistencies. And she was definitely on the thickened liquids at first, again, because her timing was so poor. She just couldn't time her swallow. So when she tried to drink the thin, it would fly to the back of her throat. It would fly out of her mouth. I'm telling you, she looked like she was like a baby trying to eat when she started. But she got better very quickly, like shockingly quickly. Maybe because, again, I'm a skeptic. And so I was just like, I don't know if this is actually going to work, but we're going to try. And it was awesome. I'd say 2 to 3 weeks, done. And she was on like normal diet, eating beautifully. I may have discharged her before she even left. Like before she left the facility, I may have discharged her from speech, which doesn't always happen with dysphagia. But yeah.
I would have to assume that somebody that has their lipstick and hair done to come to breakfast doesn't want to look like a 2-year-old when they're eating. Oh, so I'm sure this was very important to her.
Yes. Very important. Very important. And so she was a brain injury. So she did have a little bit of like lack of insight to it at first, but like once she got the mirror in front of her, she was just like, what, you know, like, oh my gosh, like just like could not even understand what she looked like. So it was, but yes, it was very important to her to have her makeup on and to go to the cafeteria or to go to the dining room and sit by her friends that she had made in inpatient rehab and progress through and, you know, get to where she could eat normal food. And everybody knew about her. She, you know, she, that's that personality. She told everybody that she was eating like a baby and she was gonna learn and to watch out because she might throw some food and, you know, just a very funny lady.
That's very funny. That's very funny. So what would be your overarching view of NMES, Vital Stem, in what you've seen with these and other patients, both with the patients and like I said, I like to talk about how dysphagia affects the family and those around them and their outlook on life in general. What can you share from your experience?
I'd say in my experience, the main thing that I think it gives patients is just that extra sort of like motivational factor. Like it's something that they can feel, even if they don't understand the, you know, math behind it or the science, they can feel it. They can see it with the biofeedback, and that just gets you more buy-in. And again, like it's something that we don't talk about because you can't like research buy-in, but every therapist will tell you that if your patient is buying into the therapy, they're going to participate better. You're going to get better outcomes. They're going to like doing therapy better, all those things. They're going to be better patients in general. So for me, which might not be the answer that you're looking for, but for me, it helps with overall buy-in and understanding of what they're doing. And then that in turn, you know, ignoring all the science and all the research and all the thing, just the buy-in, I feel like helps so, 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 so much. And then family on the same thing. You know, if family sees that you have this technology, and you're not just telling the patient to, you know, stick their tongue out and swallow, or, you know, cough, swallow, breathe, like all these strange things that speech therapists show up to a patient's bedside and have them do these weird exercises, but you have a piece of technology, something about that, it gives you that extra buy-in. And then on top of that, we all know the science behind it, but on top of the science, right? That buy-in and the motivation can make or break your therapy. So yeah, that's what I think at least. You know, yes, the science is great, and we all know that it's backed by research for decades now. But I think the immeasurable benefit is that increased motivation and buy-in.
Right, right. Awesome, awesome. On a separate topic, you also teach for child seminars, and you have a course that you've been doing with us.
I do.
Tell us a little bit about how that got started and what that's about and why people should want to come hear what you have to say.
Yeah. So like I was saying earlier, that I'm in sort of a glorified nursing home sort of facility. A lot of geriatric patients. A lot of patients that have cognitive problems, and like everybody knows that they have cognitive problems, it's very obvious, but I was just kind of stuck. Like, I know they have cognitive problems and I know that that's what I do, but what am I supposed to do with this old lady who's not going home to pay the bills or manage her own medication or do any of these things? Or she's going back to a nursing home, right? But her cognition is clearly impaired. So I got to the place here where I just was stuck. I was like, I don't know what to do with these people. And when I went back to school for my PhD, I did some research with cognition and Parkinson's. So I had kind of already geeked out a lot on attention, working memory, and those sort of like more complicated cognitive factors that we don't always learn about in school as speech therapists. So I started digging into the research. Like these little old ladies and these little old men, their number one goal is safety. They have no other functional cognitive goals except to stay off the floor, right? Other than that, they didn't have any, what I call cognitive expectations, right? There were no expectations for them to go home and do complicated cognitive stuff. So I started to dig into the research, and I discovered that there's this whole world of fall prevention that has to deal with cognition. And cognition is really the missing link in terms of how we look at falls in hospitals, in nursing homes, and at home. So the literature talked a lot about cognition and how cognition is this like huge factor, but nobody talked about what we're supposed to do about it. So I just started to do my nerdy thing and geek out over falls and cognition, and came up with, I also have a facility that is very supportive. I have a physical therapist who's amazing. So we were able to work together to really improve the fall prevention program where we are. and start targeting falls more specifically with speech therapy and physical therapy. So I kind of like, what I do is I evaluate the patients that clearly have a cognitive problem, usually that comes from either nursing or from my PT or my OT. And then I do what I call a functional assessment, where I go in with PT and they show me what the patient needs to be doing in order to be safe in with their mobility, with going to the bathroom, with all of those things. And then we target those in speech therapy through evidence-based techniques that are targeting cognition. It's been crazy fun. I think the most fun thing about it is that we have been shocked by the patients that respond to cognitive therapy. So these are patients with like no memory, right? Like you're like, they're mobile, so they're super unsafe because they're mobile, but very confused and still weak. So they need to use like walkers or something, but they don't know how to use them correctly or safely, or they forget them, or they walk while holding them up, or they don't sequence well to get on and off the toilet. And so these patients that PT honestly thought like they're going to need 24-hour supervision. There's no way that they can learn to toilet in sequence or use a walker. But then I come in and use these evidence-based cognitive strategies to teach them those sequences, those safety precautions. And we've seen improvement with just patients that you would never expect. It's been wild, you know? So it's been really fun. So I developed a course that just kind of goes through fall prevention and cognition and what aspects of cognition as speech therapists we can treat and how to do that. You know, what does the evidence say about how to target specific information from memory, and how do we target attention in terms of the evidence, right? Because there's a lot of therapy going on out there that targets memory, but the science says that it absolutely does not work. But for some reason, we have speech therapists that are still doing it. So I kind of go through that. Like, don't do this. We know that this doesn't work, but we do know that this does work. And it's been really fun. And we've got, like I said, I really have to shout out my PT because she's amazing. And she's made a lot of the changes where I am. And most importantly, she has let me completely nerd out over all this stuff. And so without her, I don't think that any of this would be happening. So it's been fun.
That's so cool. And it's called Fall Prevention, the Missing SLP Link. Is that?
Yep. That's it. That right? Yep. All about how speech therapists can get involved. Great for expanding caseloads in an ethical and evidence-based way, right? So if your census drops and you're needing to pick up patients, but you just don't know how, but you know that patients have cognitive problems, this is it. Like, really, I mean, I'm working full time in a rural hospital and I'm doing good work, and there's been changes, and our fall numbers are good.
Fall prevention is a big deal in facilities like that. I mean, that's
huge deal. Yes. And a lot of facilities leave therapists out of their fall prevention programs, which doesn't make any sense. So getting, you know, learning how to get involved with your fall prevention team, if you have one, if you don't have one, starting one up. So we kind of go over the entire fall prevention program aspect in the course as well.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah. Well, very good. Thank you for joining me, Nikki.
Thank you for having me. It's always fun to chat. Thank you so much.
Of course. All right. Well, very good. We'll be talking to you soon.
That sounds great. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. And remember, if you have an NMES success story you would like to share, contact me at craig@chiaoseminars.com. That's craig@ciaoseminars.com. We'd love to have you on the podcast. Ciao.